Bob and I are going to read to you a document which was agreed upon by Unitarian Universalists many decades ago and has been updated over time. As we read, if you are a person who likes to read along words as you hear, as you listen, you can look at what we're going to be speaking in the hardback hymnal. If you find hymn number one and turn one page back, you'll find this page about what we, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, have covenanted to affirm and promote. Now, the first half of that is the seven principles. Many people are quite familiar with the seven principles. That's how we conduct ourselves. And the children who began their children's worship today, they learn over the course of the year the seven principles. But what I want to lift up today is something that names the sources from which we draw our living tradition. It's kind of dense. So Bob and I are going to take turns reading. You're going to hear six different sources, and I'm going to start us out with an intro. The congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association share an understanding. The living tradition we share, draws from many sources.
Direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder, affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life.
Words and deeds of prophetic people, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love.
Wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life.
Jewish and Christian teachings which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves.
Humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit.
Spiritual teachings, now I'm going to read the sixth source, which has been added, voted on by all the congregations. It was added after this hymnal was printed. The sixth source says, spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. So I'm going to start out my sermon by reviewing those six sources. What was it that we just heard in all those dense words? So, one thing that we heard was that humans in all cultures share an experience of wonder. They share an experience of something that is beyond naming, a mystery. An example of that, a nest of baby birds. If you imagine looking at a nest of baby birds, and you imagine someone else who maybe is in a different part of the planet, a different age, who speaks a different language, I think we can all agree that there would be open eyes, there would be earnest looking, there would be delight and curiosity. So I'm lifting that up as an example that human beings all share a notion of wonder at creation and possibility, potential, resilience. That is shared. What you also heard when Bob and I read those sources were that throughout history, there have been people who have stood up for what they think is just. So an example from our Unitarian and Universalist heritage is abolitionists, people who said slavery is not right. They took risks. They spoke in public. They worked outside the public eye They directed funds. In some cases, they took up arms. And they encouraged others to change the status quo for what would be better. Another thing that we talked about here was that world religions inspire us in our ethical and spiritual life. Now, I think it's true that world religions are very interesting. It's neat to look and see how other people make sense of things. And I'm talking about something additional and deeper than that, because we need to be very careful not to co-opt or misuse things from other cultures. Now, as I speak, even my words need to be very careful, because what is an other culture? Each person here in this room may identify their own culture in a different way. So each person in this room would be in a different location of borrowing or authentically acting out a ritual. So let's take, for example, Hanukkah. So sometimes in the history of this congregation, we've tried to honor Hanukkah by having a menorah up front and lighting the candles. And for some people, that was educational. For some people, it was what they had grown up with, and it was authentic to their tradition. And maybe for a few people, it opened up a door that they had never considered of how to make sense of something that gave them hope and possibility in a new way. Let's take a different example. Native American traditions. It is true that in this country, in the history of our country, there were times when settlers, pioneers, armies, leaders took Native American lands, killed people, and then got very interested in, let's say, some of the ritual clothing that they had used in their rituals, and perhaps took that ritual clothing and put it up in their homes or in museums. Or perhaps got really interested in the chants that the Native Americans had used, and then began to use those chants. I think we need to look very carefully at when that is co-opting from a position of power, someone who has now lost their power, and perhaps those ritual chants or ritual clothing were designed to protect one from harm. Having made that distinction, I'm going to continue on in our sources. One of the sources says that we draw on Jewish and Christian teachings. Now, why wouldn't it say that we draw on other ones also? This particular one refers to our history, because Unitarian Universalism did grow out of a Judeo-Christian background. And then the next source is humanist teachings, which to me, the humanist teachings mean that we don't totally give in to superstition or prayer alone as something that can achieve things. We say that we as humans need to take responsibility for what we know, what we do. An example is our capacity in the past century to use nuclear power for nuclear weapons and to harm others. So humanist teachings say, okay, we have that power, we better take responsibility for it. We have these heads, we have these hearts, let's use them. That's our humanist source. And then finally, the source that was added most recently, the spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions. Many of the folks in our congregation practice honoring the solstices and the equinoxes, so naming when the light is most visible and when the dark is most present and when we find the balance times. There has been in this congregation in the past a UU pagan group and a nature spirit group, and that's the nature of congregations, that groups ebb and flow, but in people's hearts, the practices remain present. The youth in our congregation have curricula that they use each year, and one of the curricula is one called Neighboring Faiths. It's actually offered every other year. So our middle schoolers, every other year, engage in a year-long program of studying world religions, and they visit other houses of worship in our community. So for example, going to Yogaville, going to our partner church, Ebenezer Baptist Church, visiting the Muslim society. And in that way, they are learning about those neighboring faiths and how to be a good neighbor. At this time, we don't have an adult curriculum version of that, but we have an opportunity this year to begin to touch into that. Because this congregation does not have a lead minister this year, we are having guests in our pulpit. Some are Unitarian Universalist guest speakers, and some are guest speakers from other faith traditions. So at the end of this month, we'll be welcoming Michael Chook, who's a Baptist minister. Later in the fall, we'll be welcoming Alia Kadir from the Islamic Society. And then in the winter, we'll be welcoming Methodist and Buddhist and other speakers. Anytime a person reflects on their faith, they could be doing it in what I would call kind of dry descriptors, like Bob and I read, or they could do it with stories. I am hoping that our guests will tell us stories. Because stories flesh out the truth in this life, that as we go along in life, we reach obstacles and challenges, and we may not know how to go forward. When I was doing my internship at the University of Virginia in the summer of 2006 as a chaplain, it was also at a time when I was grappling with whether I identified as Presbyterian, the way I was raised, or whether I identified as Unitarian Universalist, which is what I had found in my adulthood. As I grappled with that, I got some advice from a mentor. And that mentor said, "Alex, in the dark of the night, when you're on duty in that hospital and you are awakened to go be present at a crisis in the hospital, what is it that's going to help you wake up and show warmth and love and care? If you believe that Jesus is what will get you through that dark night crisis, then you probably identify as Christian. If it's something else that fits in the UU tradition, then you probably identify as Unitarian Universalist." And it was that crucible that helped me name my Unitarian Universalist identity and then serve as a leader. So I'm guessing that each of you has a story about a time that you faced an obstacle. There's so many challenges that can happen in life. Maybe the loss of a child. Maybe working for an organization that was doing something unethical. Maybe being called to serve in the military during wartime. Maybe finding that your identity is not an identity that is affirmed by society or family around you. So what is it that helped you get through or around or under that obstacle and challenge? As a child, one may have one faith identity, or one may reject faith. And then in teen years, as a young adult, as one explores identity and potential in the world, one may name one's faith tradition in a different way. And then as an adult, differently, and as an elder, looking at the fact that one dies, it becomes very real in the elder years, then one may have a different way of naming what they trust when they're going to cross that final threshold. And so I believe it is important for each of us to honor the fact that we have seasons of the stories of our spiritual life. To lift that up, I'd like to read to you an example from a Unitarian Universalist named Yuri Yamamoto. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. That comes from a book, Unitarian Universalist of Color, Stories of Struggle, Courage, Love, and Faith. I've picked out some excerpts to share with you, and I am aware that by the very act of my picking out excerpts, I may be unconsciously lifting up the parts of her story with which I am more comfortable. So if anybody wants to borrow this book afterwards, we can pass it around. You can read the whole essay. Here's the start. She says, I was born in Japan in 1960 and was raised as an only child of two former revolutionaries in Tokyo. My parents were staunch anti-authoritarians, were non-religious. Maybe some of you can relate to that experience. Perhaps anti-religious would be more accurate, and viewed religious organizations with skepticism because they often aligned themselves with power or exercised their own power to control people. My paternal ancestors were Shinto priests for generations, but my father detested all rituals, including weddings and funerals. So I'm reading you her childhood reflections in hopes that it will spark in you your own reflections about your childhood experience. She continues, yet I was strangely drawn to the cultural and religious practices and teachings of Buddhism and Shintoism, which have coexisted in Japan for more than 1,000 years. Standing alone in the lush green forest or looking out to the roaring gray ocean in harsh winter, I felt the presence of the Yao Yorozu no Kami, which means the 8 million gods of Shintoism. When I was a teen, I developed a set of beliefs. And again, as you listen, I encourage you to think about what did you believe when you were a teen, or if you're a teen right now, how are you making sense of the world? As a teen, I developed a belief that there was a unique God in me and in each person. When someone claimed to have heard a God's voice, it actually came from the God within her. And even though each God was unique, most people preferred to share their God with others because believing in a universal God made them feel more confident and secure about themselves. I preferred to be a lone seeker and looked down on the weak people who congregated for comfort. She continues in her essay to describe coming to the United States for studies and the studies not working out in the way she had hoped, and then using her skills as a pianist to gain work in a congregation that was Unitarian Universalist. From there, she heard views that challenged her, gave her hope. And at the end of this essay, after many chapters of awareness, she says, Unitarian Universalism and Unitarian Universalists have changed my life many times. Indeed, I can no longer talk about myself without mentioning Unitarian Universalism. There are many issues to be resolved within myself and within this denomination, but I am willing to do the work. So I invite you to consider, what are the seasons and chapters that you've lived through? What have you rejected? And if you were asked to name your faith, your spiritual journey, your agnosticism, your atheism right now, how would you name that? It was recently pointed out to me how many people in this congregation were raised Jewish or identify as partly Jewish, And while that is true and they acknowledge it, it's rarely a name that I hear them give for themselves. Which leads me to the third part of this sermon. We've talked about sources, seasons, and now I'd like to talk about mystery. Because the name of a religion is not just dry facts. A label is only a label. A label leaves room for mystery, those things that are beyond naming. When we cross the threshold back into that place that we started out of mystery and wonder. The reason that this is important is because without this place beyond naming, our lives would only be dry and intellectual. And yet we know that curiosity and vibrance are what help us get through those times of challenge and obstacle. I'd like to read an example from another person, and this time I'm choosing someone outside our Unitarian tradition. This is Peter Gomes. He's an American Baptist preacher. He serves at a university, and he's in charge of the chapel and gives sermons in the chapel every week. But that building, the chapel on the university campus, is used for many other things throughout the week. And here's a story that he told. One day, I smelled incense in this church, so I came up from my office to find out what was going on. And I found myself in the midst of a Russian Orthodox funeral service. Black-bearded and robed priests were chanting the burial office for the dead, with a large mixed choir singing the service with them. Up and down went the thick smoke of the censer. I was transfixed, and I stayed for the service, although I knew neither the deceased nor a word of what was being said or sung. Yet, indeed, I did know what was going on, and I was part of that worship, not because I knew, but because I was. Now, you may well say that they knew what was going on, and I trust they did. But if I understood the essence of that liturgy, they knew that they were standing at the place beyond which knowledge would not take them. They knew that what they were doing, irrelevant to the needs of the world that day, was the most relevant thing possible to their souls and bodies at that moment. And I, ignorant of it all, was yet a part of it. And so this fall about once a month, this winter about once a month, as we receive guests into this pulpit who speak from their faith tradition, I invite us to curiosity and openness. They know they're coming to talk to a bunch of Unitarian Universalists or people who've chosen to visit a Unitarian Universalist congregation that day. What is it that they feel is a worthy bridge? What are the stories of their lives that spark a mirror for stories in your lives? What can we learn about being neighbors who live out our values, distinct as individuals and in community? Blessed be. Amen. Let us reflect in silence.